Dialectical Behavior Therapy was created in the 1980s by Marsha Linehan in Seattle, Washington.
Today, DBT is taught all over the world.
We're two therapists who believe everyone can benefit from DBT skills.
I'm Kate.
I'm Michelle.
And this is DBT and Me.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. It's Q&A 47.
Oof.
Yippee.
Closer to 50 with everyone.
That's right. That's our next milestone that we're aiming for. We're just going to try to get by until then. But we have some good questions this time. I mean, we typically do. We have great stuff from our listeners. So, but yeah, I liked some of these ones today as important things to talk about that I think people could relate to. So you get to start us off, Kate.
Okie dokie. All right. This first one says, any recommendations on how to pick a new therapist? I haven't been since November because of a change in jobs and lapse in healthcare coverage. My old therapist isn't in network, and I have failed at finding out the cost to self-pay.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just like, I think I maybe interpret that end of that sentence a little differently than I did the first time I read it, but that's fine. I can go through that when I get to my part.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe they're trying to have failed to figure out how much it would cost to self-pay their old therapist.
Oh.
Huh. Right? My old therapist isn't in network, and I failed at finding out the cost of self-pay.
Yeah. Well, I think ultimately...
Well, the information will be good, so whatever. Sorry. I was just like, wait a second.
Sometimes we read these and new things come. Yeah. And in essence, I think what we both were planning to address is just like, you know, what do you do when you can't afford the full cost of therapy? Not going to lie. Therapy can add up. It is an investment. It costs a lot of money when you're not seeing somebody who takes your insurance. So a couple tips and suggestions I have, nothing to do with DBT here, just pure practical advice for anybody who may be having this question about how can I find a therapist even when I can't afford to pay the full fee of therapy. So there is a website. I didn't verify it beforehand. When I say I didn't verify it, I know it's a legit website. But I didn't look up the exact URL. I think it's openpathcollective.org.
I can find out while you finish talking.
Okay, perfect. Even if you just Google search Open Path, you'll find the website. And basically, it's a therapist directory. And the intention of it is to have it be that people can easily find therapists who will see clients for lower cost. So every therapist on OpenPath has agreed to see clients somewhere between $30 to $60 a session.
Nice. So, and it is openpathcollective.org. You're right.
I got it. Yep. Awesome. Thank you for verifying that. So you can try going on there and seeing if you can find a therapist either close to you geographically that says they have OpenPath availability. Or if you're open to seeing someone virtually over telehealth, just anybody in your state who is listed on OpenPath, even if you're like, oh, that person is 3 hours away from me. But if you're open to video sessions and they are in your state, you could work with them. So that could be a good website to look into. The other thing that I generally recommend is that if you find a therapist that you really like and want to work with, even if you're like, I can't afford this person's full fee, try to talk with them anyways and ask them if they would be willing and open to see you for a sliding fee, right? A reduced fee, using that verbiage when you reach out to them. They may say no. They may say, you know, this is my fee, or my sliding fee spots are all full. You might be able to ask if they have a wait list, like if a sliding fee spot becomes available, do you have a wait list where you could then reach back out to me because I'd really like to work with you? Just ask the questions and you may be surprised that therapists that you might want to work with could actually see you for less than what their full fee is. Some therapists do have that availability, but you won't know unless you ask about it. And in general, with finding a new therapist, regardless of whether this is really broadly, not just speaking directly to the listener, but regardless of whether you have the means to pay full fee for therapy or whether you don't, above and beyond, I just recommend trying to see if you can do 2 to 3 consultation calls to pick who you think would be the best fit for you. Picking a therapist is sometimes like dating. You know, when you go on first dates and you're just like, ooh, not that person. But then you go on first dates where you're like, oh my gosh, that was really great. We really connected. Same thing with therapy, right? You are going to find therapists who maybe on paper, you're like, oh, sounds like we could be a good fit. And then you go for that first session and you're like, oh my God, I never want to sit with this person again. If you do a consultation phone call in advance, which most therapists do, that can maybe help you sense whether this is somebody you want to work with or not. So reach out to some therapists in your area. Hopefully they'll get back to you. Say they have openings and you can say that you want to set up a call with them, which they will likely suggest anyways. And at the end of the call, let them know if you want to move forward or let them know, hey, I'm going to be talking with a couple other therapists that I'm considering, and then I'll reach back out to you if I decide to work with you. But consider your options. Take your time. I would say it is important to narrow it down to like the top 2 or 3. Otherwise, you're going to be spending a lot of time. If you're like, I have it down to like the top 5 or 6, like get it down to the top 2 or 3 and then reach out for that phone call step. But it is important to consider a few people. I think that can be good when you're trying to find someone new.
Lovely.
All right. What about your tips, Kate?
Well, so assuming that my most recent interpretation isn't accurate and the person isn't needing to ask their old therapist if they can go back to them, one thing you might do is ask your old therapist to help. I have definitely helped clients of mine that had to go elsewhere. I've also helped like the friends or partners or family of clients. Either like, oh yeah, I really recommend a colleague of mine named such and such. I think they have openings right now. Here's their information. Or like a lot of us are part of professional networks where we might be able to ask for referrals based on what you're needing or looking for, right? So my first thought was actually to see in what way your old therapist might be able to help you with finding someone new. Or I suppose if there's someone in your life who has a therapist, you might be willing to help. Mm-hmm. Right? Be the me to your partner's, whatever. Anyway, I think it can be helpful before going into those 2 to 3 consult calls that Michelle mentioned. It can be helpful to sit down and try and think about, what have you liked or disliked about your past therapy experience or experiences? And try and jot those down a little bit. That can be a really handy list to bring into those consult calls to ask about. Like, I'm looking for someone who's more directive, gives a lot of homework, and, I don't know, is in love with CBT. I don't know. Right, something that's really, whatever stands out to you as having made those past experiences good, or things that you absolutely want to avoid, at all costs. That can be really helpful to be armed with before you go into those consult calls. And then my last piece of advice is just don't be afraid to fire your first choice. Even if you do those 2 to 3 consult calls and you pick the one that felt like the absolute best connection, awesome human being ever. And again, I like dating, as you said, Michelle, sometimes you might get 2 or 3 in and be like, ooh, I was wrong. Right? Like, I have chosen poorly. In which case, fire them. Sooner rather than later, right? First of all, I don't know. I know that there are therapists who get sad about getting fired, but most therapists I know of have, most of the time that they've been fired, they felt that something was off, but not quite enough off to necessarily fire you. So, get them their slot open and get you back onto your space of actual, like, your path of healing, and just fire them sooner rather than later. Like, well, maybe I'll give it a little longer to see if it... No! Move on. It's okay. Right? Any therapist can handle being fired, I promise. And if you are just trying to figure out how to ask your old therapist, I don't know, maybe some cope ahead. Plan out doing it. Rehearse it in your mind over and over and over again. It'll be a lot easier to do once you actually need to make the phone call.
Got a DBT skill in there somewhere.
Thanks.
I will also say, I don't want to like completely disagree with your point about firing them, because I do support what you're getting at, which is basically like, yeah, if you're not benefiting from therapy, then don't keep doing it. And also, I might add on that before you fire them,
I'll give them feedback.
Try to talk about
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair.
Try to say, hey, you know, use some Dear Man to ask for what you might need, or some FAST, depending on what feels appropriate. But to basically say, you know, I'm not benefiting from this as much as I hoped I would up until this point, you know, or, well, you said something, you know, last session and it just really didn't sit well with me.
True.
And I want us to talk about it. Try to let the therapist know if things are starting to go off track. I tell my clients this all the time. I'm like, you know, if something isn't feeling right, let me know, because then we can try to course
correct it together. Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, it makes me feel very trusted when they do bring up issues and things like that. That's true. I guess I was going for more of that, like, I don't know, I'm just going to say for myself, if not that I can imagine somehow getting through the interview process with this, but if like two things in, they're like, yes, and then as soon as you invite Christ as your Lord and Savior into your heart, I'd be like, oh my God, what have I done? Right?
Like, yeah, there might be like hard no's.
Yes.
Like, we cannot move forward from this. The same way there might be with dating, right? Like a big enough
that's red flag. Red flags, like, right? Like, oh shit, no. Right? Like, don't go past your oh shit no, but you have an absolutely, yes. In fact, I think I've advocated for that with you on past podcasts. Thank you for pointing out that I was getting a bit hyperbolic. I agree with you on your points of talking with them first. Unless it's an oh holy shit.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Let's see. This next one says, what DBT skill is helpful when emotions all seem to be big with fast swings from one to another? I signed up for a depression trial in which the drug shows promising results. I'm thinking of backing out because it isn't available other than in the 6-week trial. It seems dangerous to take something that in previous studies has shown a 60% reduction in depression and then stop.
Oof. So, it's going to sound a lot like I'm ignoring the second half of that, but I'm not. It's just when I was reading through the notes, I saw, Michelle, that I don't have much to say beyond what you were going to say on that one.
I'll address the second
half. Yeah. So I just don't, I see you, I hear you. That does sound rough. And I think you're going to hit on more or less what I was going to say. So, just some skills that I would think of. I like this because, you know, Michelle, I think between you and I, we have a lot of, a good array of different ways to address that possible thing. My first place is mindfulness, specifically mindfulness of emotions, right? Practicing mindfulness helps to give us that little bitty bit of distance between ourselves and our feels, which can really help with slowing that down, easing out that bumpy road a little bit. Wise mind, right? If your big emotions are perhaps driving you to big actions, right? Maybe wise mind is a place to check in with yourself. Ride the wave also if impulsive actions are really tied to those big mood swings for you. And preventatively, you know, ABC, right? The accumulate positive experiences, build mastery and cope ahead. Well, right. I love cope ahead, but I've never been able to figure out what it has to do with the other two, Michelle. I will be honest.
It's purely for the acronym.
I know. That's, I'm like, one of these things is not like the others. Like, I get it. They're all three sort of preventative, broadly speaking. But anyway, whatever. They don't feel the same to me, so screw the C. Not always, but just for this particular iteration, I don't think it's helpful. But, right, so accumulating positive experiences and building mastery may both help with basically smoothing out your emotional track a little bit. Yeah, those were my DBT skills for off the top of my cuff. I mean, really, you could just chuck in anything in the emotion regulation module, broadly speaking.
Well, and that's funny because I also list three skills. So we're just giving you a plethora to choose from, listener.
It's true.
and the ones that I touched on were by and large from motion regulation too. Gosh, whenever it comes to motion regulation, I come back to this all the time, I feel like. But start with please. Start there. Make sure that you are taking care of those different components of please and trying to get that in order. I think especially when it comes to big, fast mood swings like this person is talking about, we are more likely to swing and to swing farther if we are not doing well with please. We haven't slept well. We haven't eaten in a while. When we're in physical pain, all those things just make it more likely for the mood swings to happen in the first place. So begin with please. Also, if you can, understand it might be a bit of a stretch when mood swings are happening really quickly, but checking the facts and using opposite action if needed, which it likely will be needed here, because that will hopefully help you to understand, okay, even if my emotion does fit the facts, does it fit the facts this much, right? To feel it to this degree, to swing this far with the emotion based off of whatever might be leading to me feeling this way. Okay, is that in line with the facts? And if you can do check the facts, that might be enough to give you that pause and to be able to, you know, return to some kind of baseline ever so slightly. That would maybe be the hope. The other skill that I think could help with helping you get back to baseline a little bit would be stop. If you're able to recognize, oh, I'm starting to swing, using stop can hopefully help you then pause and come back. So we just gave you like six skills to pick from. Six, seven, however you want to think about it. So pick and choose. Like we say a lot, don't try all of those. Pick one or two that feel most helpful to start. As Kate said, I will address the second part of this, which is the depression trial and why this listener might be choosing to back out. Kate and I are not medical providers, but what we are going to say is to talk to your medical provider, your doctor, your primary care physician, and see what they recommend. My initial response when I read through this is, oh, if you are feeling like this medication is helping you, I understand where this listener is coming from, which is I'm going to have to stop it anyways after 6 weeks. So, like, why do I really want to start? Or I guess maybe, again, this is the thing where we don't know the information. Maybe I interpret it as, actually, I thought that they had started it and then chose to stop. But maybe they actually haven't started it. They just have seen that it's showing positive, like promising results.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's how I interpreted. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe you haven't even taken any of the medication yet. And you're like, well, maybe I just don't even want to do this in the first place. But talk to your primary care doctor because they might have some kind of, well, they most likely will have some more knowledge about, maybe they can look into this depression trial a little bit. What kind of antidepressant, what kind of medication, right? There are different types of antidepressant medications. And if you're like, well, I'm really curious about, you know, what it's saying about this, they can hopefully help prescribe you something ongoing that would be similar than the trial drug. So if you do start the trial, and if it is working for you, they might be able to help keep that going if you do decide to move forward with finding something similar, even if it's not the exact same medication from the trial. So talk to your doctor if you haven't already. Get their take. Try to understand if they think this would be worth it for you to start. And if they can either prescribe for you or connect you with a prescriber like a psychiatrist who could. Just, yeah, talk with your doctor. See what they say. Because, yeah, I'd hate for you to miss out on this opportunity when it could be really good. That would suck.
It would suck.
So, that's my two cents.
Okay. Okay, so the next one reads, my mother has BPD and has been controlling me and not respecting me for all my years. I'm going to be 50. I have been to many counselors and constantly have been doing new things and reading self-help books since the age of 20. In fact, I take up a great deal of every day trying to find a strategy for dealing with my mother. The result seems only to not see her or talk to her. I am willing to do anything but that. The second part of this is that I am inwardly very angry. I pray, I ask to forgive and be forgiven. I try strategy after strategy, but the anger does not go away. Even if I forgive everything from today and from the past, she will do something new and hurtful tomorrow. She is even trying to control my 18-year-old and my 12-year-old child. My sister is 12 years older and has 4 kids, and she struggles with the same issues with our mother, but she refuses counseling and to do all that I do to find a strategy.
Yeah, this is a big one. And I'm sure you will have things to say, Kate, because as you shared on the podcast before, you know what it is to have a mom with BPD.
Yep.
So what came to me first that might be helpful, listener, is that we have some episodes on our other podcast, The Couch and the Chair, that address some of what you're talking about in this post. So I looked up the episode numbers for you. I did some homework so that I would be prepared. So our 13th episode is about moms with mental health issues, basically. Kate shares on that episode, and we have a special guest who also talks about her relationship with her mom. And what I thought was really good about that episode, which we recorded a while ago now, but that guest had made the decision for a while to cut off contact with her mom. And it didn't stick, right? There were like times where she didn't have any contact and then times where she did have contact. And like you talked about the same dilemma, Kate, of like, gosh, I can't stand being around my mom. It causes me so much stress. However, like to just cut ties, that doesn't feel good. And that's exactly what this listener is saying. Like, I'm willing to do anything but cut her out completely. So we talk a lot about that in that episode. And the other episode from the Couch and the Chair podcast that could be helpful is the 4th episode, which is about anger. Because ultimately, what Kate and I both say in that episode is that anger for us is not an emotion that feels very comfortable. We've really struggled over the course of our lives to allow ourselves to feel and express anger. And this listener is also talking about that, right? Being inwardly very angry and not knowing what to do with it. trying these different things, but the anger remains. It does not seem to shift or budge. So my hope is that in listening to both of those podcast episodes, if you decide to do so, and again, just look for The Couch and the Chair wherever you're currently listening to us. It's on all the same platforms. That my hope is that if you do go on and listen to those podcast episodes, you'll just feel like you're not alone. That's really my hope. I don't know if we're going to magically say anything in those episodes. We do give tips and suggestions, but I don't know if we're going to magically say anything in those episodes that's going to necessarily solve this long-standing issue that the listener is talking about. But I'm hoping it will just help in terms of just feeling not alone, which I find personally can be very helpful to realize that, oh, I'm not the only one who's struggling with these things. But the main thing I wanted to directly address from what this listener wrote is that challenge about, you know, the result seems only to not see her or talk to her, and I'm willing to do anything but that. So taking space from anybody who we have a relationship with, or whether it's a mom, in this case, like we're talking about, or really any other kind of relationship, it does not have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be that you don't see her ever or that you never talk to her again. Does not have to be that. Which my gut feeling is telling me that this listener may have had people in their life who has told them, just cut her out. Like, that will solve your problem. I don't necessarily think it does solve the problem. This is, of course, case by case and a very individual choice. But I don't know if that necessarily solves the problem, because as this listener's talking about really clearly, you're still going to be left with the anger, even if you don't ever see or talk to her again. So what I would suggest with taking space is to just try seeing if you can take slightly more space than you do now. So like the example that was coming to mind for me is, let's say that you talk with your mom on the phone every day. I don't know if you do or not, but let's say you do. How would it feel to talk to her on the phone every other day? Or even instead of 7 days a week, 6 days a week, or 5 days a week? How would that feel? How would that feel if you, et cetera? And I'm not saying she's necessarily going to like it, because she won't. But if you were to say something to her like, you know, Mom, I have a really busy day tomorrow. I'm not going to be able to do our typical phone call, but I'll call you the next day, the day after, right? Then if she tries calling you, to say, I'm not going to answer on this day because I told her I wouldn't talk to her on this day. Just try a strategy sort of like that to see what it is to dial it back with how much contact you have with her, but not to just cut off all contact. Just notice how that feels. And it may feel really uncomfortable at first, and it may be really challenging because she's likely going to push back. But that's when you can lean on some of the other DBT skills, like fast and maybe doing some improve or those kinds of things on the days that you're not going to see or talk to her to get through that. But see what that does for your mental health. To just take a slight step back. But you don't have to run away. Just a slight step back from her. As for the anger, I've had to learn this in therapy. You talk about trying a lot of strategies, so I don't want to make suggestions that you've already done. But the strategies that you name, I understand why those aren't working for you when it comes to anger. Prayer, which is part of improve, can be really helpful for a lot of things. That can be really helpful. It can be really helpful to talk about our anger to other people, to tell someone, oh my gosh, I'm so angry at my mom and this is the reason why. That can be helpful. But in order to actually release anger, it needs something physical. That's what I have found when it comes to anger. You need to do something physically with your body to release the anger. So praying isn't probably going to cut it. Talking about it isn't probably going to cut it. I love journaling, but journaling might not even cut it. Like, you need to do something physically with your body. This is why I will sometimes recommend to people screaming. Let yourself yell, right? Ah, that kind of a yell. Do it as much as you need to. Hit something safely. That's why you have the cliche of hitting a pillow. Do a very like cardio kind of physical activity, right? The intense exercise from TIP. Do some of that stuff, right? The paired muscle relaxation too from TIP, where you're like tensing and releasing. That can help. That's doing something physical, but do something with your body. Reading all the self-help books is not going to help with letting go of anger. You gotta do something physical, because it isn't a situation where it's like, oh, I did that thing and now I'm not ever gonna feel angry again. Like, having an ongoing regular practice to release anger can be really, really helpful. I think this is why some people find like kickboxing so hopefully they go every week. Like, that's a regular release of anger. So do something that's physically releasing the anger from your body, And then do it over and over again as often as you need to, which might wind up being a daily practice where you just take like a minute to yell. Do it. That's what's going to help in releasing the anger, is having a physical release that you're doing consistently. So that's my thoughts there, which were quite a few. So I'm sure there's more for you to say, Kate, because I know this is a personal topic for you, but yeah, I talked a lot.
It's true, but I'll try not to do too much extraneous. Yeah, like what you said, right? It makes a lot of sense, right? Not an all or nothing approach to things. Right, you know, anger isn't one and done. A couple of different things. Not that this person ever said, you know, I'm the problem, but I did think I wanted to start with saying maybe they aren't. In a sort of, you know, I try this other thing, I have this strategy, I have that strategy, right? I'm like, I'm trying all these different things, right, is what comes up again and again in the listener's accounting. And that to me sounds like, if I just do the right thing, this will stop being a problem. That's only true if you're the problem. Right? Like, and if you're angry about someone, I don't know, controlling you and disrespecting you the entirety of your life, that's a real reasonable thing to be feeling. That's not you being the problem. It's a problem in as much as nobody wants to live feeling angry all the time. But it's not a problem you can solve, right? Because you can't make your mom stop being herself. Right? She's gonna be who she is. And there's nothing you can do about that. Right? So, just a gentle suggestion that no amount of strategies on your end are gonna make your mom stop being the woman that she is. Which is, namely, what's been causing all the problems. I did want to say, that being the case, that you might feel an amount of a sense of peace if you try really leaning in to your ownership of your choice to keep her in your life. Right, I know you say, oh gosh, right, I'm willing to do anything other than cut her out. So it's not as though you don't know that that's your choice and that you're making it, but it may feel, it might be a good reminder of your ownership now, of your power, right? What is your power? Your power is that you can go or stay. And you are choosing to stay. You are enacting your power, right? I think a lot of times people on the outside of these kinds of relationships can think that leaving is strong and staying is weak. And like, that's a narrative that can be said in here, right? Or like, you're not doing the thing that's difficult, right? You're not cutting out the toxic relationship, right? There's a lot of judgment that can come with that too. But right, staying has its own burdens. Right, has its own struggles, has plenty of its own difficulties. And so if you recognize that what you're choosing to do is a choice, and B, is actually a choice that requires a remarkable amount of strength to perpetuate and stick with, might help you feel a little bit more powerful in a situation that otherwise can feel very powerless. right, and it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I know you said that, Michelle, and you spoke to it really eloquently, but apparently I just think it bears repeating.
It really does bear repeating.
Right, you can dial in, dial out at different times for different reasons, different amounts, right? No decision you make has to be permanent. My mom and I didn't speak for right about a year. Más o menos, a little bit. Now we speak, but less than we used to, right? Like, you know, things flex and change and move, and that's okay, right? You don't have to rigidly stick to anything. I think that's most of what I have that I would add on to what you already said, Michelle.
Okay, awesome. On to the last one. So this one says, I know this has been talked about before in this group, but I wanted to share an experience regarding my fear of abandonment that happened recently. For reference, I have BPD. My close friend seemed in a hurry to leave our hug the past couple times we hung out, for innocent reasons, because he was tired. I was feeling very abandoned after our meetup, and he was not available to talk about it for 5 days afterwards. We finally talked, and I came up with something I think may help. When we hug, he can say, I'm hugging you because I care about you. He did that this time, and I spent the drive home crying because I felt cared for, something I didn't feel in my childhood. The statement also takes the focus off of the leaving and onto the caring. I keep repeating what he said to me because I have a bit of an object permanence struggle regarding abandonment. That is, if the person isn't in front of me, I have trouble remembering that they care about me. Anyone else do similar things or have other ideas for how to deal when those feelings arise? I see this as a bit of self-soothing, which I know has been mentioned as well. I still feel a bit of emotional addiction towards my friend, even though he said this, however. I reached out again today with no response, and I'm trying to not feel abandoned yet again.
Well, first of all, I think it's kind of a brilliant turn of phrase to attach the concept of object permanence to this idea.
Yeah,
I was like, really smart. I love this. gold star for phrasing. But also, yeah, no, that's really very, there's a lot of people who struggle with that. And especially, you know, this listener identifies as having BPD, and the, emotional object permanence is absolutely something that is often struggled with, by folks with BPD. So I don't, just to normalize that in that regard. You're certainly not the only person who goes through this. I love your idea, listener, of I'm hugging you because I care about you, right? That's a lovely sort of reframing or shift in focus, a good reminder, something you can kind of carry with you after the encounter with your friend. But I also wondered if it might help you to carry a literal something away from your encounters with your friend. So, right, this could broadly speaking be lumped under the concept of a talisman, right? Or a worry stone, it could be, or something. It doesn't matter what kind of object it is, other than it's going to be easier if you can carry it around discreetly. But that's not necessary, technically speaking. But, right, some object that either you imbue some meaning into it or have your friend do it that's like, all right, this object is for me to touch or look at or interact with in some fashion when I need to remember that my friend cares about me. Right? This is my reminder. This is my touchstone. This is my anchor. This is my thing I can come back to. Right? Michelle, I don't want to take your thunder away. I love your idea of a list. That could be something that you're like this. So Michelle will talk about that later, but that's something like you could have your friend help you write, and you could carry like a card or something from your friend around with you. Something, right? But my one nudge is I would encourage it. Well, I would encourage that it be a tangible physical object, not like an email, right? Or something that you can just look at. It's going to do more for you if it's something you can touch, right? That's physically, tangibly present. So that was one thing I had as an idea. I did think another, so you were talking about a listener, I reached out again today with no response and I'm trying not to feel abandoned again. You mentioned your friend not being able to talk about what happened for 5 days after your last meetup. I wondered if you and your friend might be open to setting up some agreed upon, like, you'll hear from me no later than sort of time when you guys part ways. So it's not to say, nope. You can't text him and he can't text you until that time, right? Like, that's not a no contact allowed until such and such time. That's just if life gets busy, if the shit goes sideways, if whatever, like for whatever reason, I'm not responsive for a while. I know I'll be able to touch base with you again on Tuesday, you know, whatever. And that might at least have you have something that you know you're headed towards. instead of maybe like a frantic, I don't know when I'm going to hear from him next. If you have a guaranteed time, might happen sooner, but definitely will happen by then. I think that might help with soothing some of that anxiety and fear of abandonment. Broadly speaking, just DBT skill-wise, unsurprisingly, probably the three things I brought to the table were mindfulness, wise mind, and self-soothe.
Brought all your favorites.
I brought all my favorites. Right, but this is, right, this, like, touching base, being with what's real, giving yourself that little bit of distance between your own experience and the experience of it. And, right, taking care of yourself when you can't have the friend taking care of you. I guess that was my reasoning behind those things. So, all right. I think that's it for me, Michelle. On to you.
I really liked all of your ideas. That's a great strategy with having a physical object. You're struggling with emotional object permanence. Yeah, it's a great idea. I mean, I just wanted to start by saying, you know, good job, listener, for asking for what you need.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. to say, hey, when we hug, can you say this phrase to me? Really great awareness about what would feel good for you and then being able to ask for it. Fantastic. So that deserves applause and accolades. But as for strategies, like Kate was saying, I was thinking of a list. And also, like you mentioned, Kate, which I agree with, I was truly imagining this as a physical list, not a list on your phone. Yep, not an email, a piece of paper list that you can put up somewhere or hold on to in your hands, that piece of it is important. And so what I was imagining this list to be is a list of all of the times that this friend has said or done something that made you feel cared for. You know, I'm coming up with random examples here, but maybe it was when they surprised you on your birthday and showed up to your house and said, let's go out to dinner. Maybe it was a time when you called them because you were really having a hard day and they just listened to you talk about it on the phone. It felt really important. This example you talk about here in your post, perfect. That time when they hugged you and said the phrase, right? Whatever it is, however many you can think of, write them down. And then this list can be something you continue to add to. So the next time you hang out with your friend, let's say the next time you see them, you know, he does something that leads to you feeling cared for. Come home and write it down on the list. So then, let's say a week later, something's going on, you know, yeah, the classic, let's say you called him, he didn't answer, didn't call you back right away kind of a thing. Pull out your list and look at it. So when you can sense, I'm getting a little dysregulated here, right? This can hopefully be a thing to bring you back down a little bit with the emotion ramping up. That's the purpose of Kate's object idea too, right? So that you're able, it really is kind of a check the facts thing, honestly. That's basically, I'm not asking you to do a check the facts worksheet or to go through all the questions, but the intention behind this list or behind the object that Kate's talking about is that this will help you check the facts. Factually, these things that you write down on your list happened. These were true events that took place, and that it can help to remind you these things happened. These things show me that this person does care about me. So that will hopefully help the emotional intensity decrease a little bit, is maybe the hope there. The other thing that stood out to me with reading this, which you may be familiar with this phrase, listener, favorite person, that's a term used commonly with people who are diagnosed with BPD. And, you know, when you're diagnosed with BPD, you form really strong attachments to people. And you may often form a strong attachment with one person in particular. So it occurred to me that maybe this friend you're talking about is a favorite person for you when you talk about, I still feel a bit of emotional addiction. Another way to think of it is with this idea of having an attachment figure. So in attachment theory work, the idea is that we all have at least one, but sometimes two, maybe three. It's normally not a big number, but we have a couple people in our lives. Typically, it starts off as our parents, inevitably, because those are the first people we form connections with, for better or worse, when we are born. But you have an attachment figure, which is kind of the person who, when things are really hard, this would be the person you would think of to go to. This is the person who maybe feels like your safe place. This is the person who you rely on and depend on more than you might other people. So it's not a bad thing if this friend is a favorite person, if this friend is an attachment figure for you, because we are meant to have people that we attach to in life. We're meant to have an attachment figure. It's a good thing to have somebody that we can lean on and rely on. That's good. And also, I would just encourage you to notice how you might treat this friend that you're talking about in this post differently than your other friendships. This person's actions may carry a lot more weight for you. You might not care if another friend of yours pulled out of a hug early. But with this friend, it means a lot more. So just noticing that and just recognizing and trying to catch, again, this is another way of checking the facts. This thing that he did, would it bother me just as much if another friend did this? Oh, if another friend did that, I wouldn't care. Oh, okay. So maybe that tells me that what I can do here is remind myself that maybe this action was not so bad. Like, yes, it really hurt me, but okay, maybe it's not so bad. Whereas if, let's say, this friend truly does something to hurt you, and if you're like, oh, if any of my friends did that, that would really not be okay with me. Oh, okay, then that tells you something. So just maybe having that awareness or checking in about that, of like, when this friend does something that makes me feel abandoned, would I feel abandoned by anybody doing this or just by this person doing this? And then try some of the strategies that Kate and I are talking about with the object or the list or that kind of a thing to hopefully help.
Makes sense.
That's where I'll end.
Well, and that's where we'll end. That was our last one. So if you have a question that you'd like to get on a future Q&A episode, feel free to email us, dbtandmepodcast@gmail.com, or you can post it in the Facebook group. So facebook.com/groups/dbtandme. DBT and Me Podcast.
I believe so.
I never give out the whole address. I normally only do that for the couch and the chair. Yeah. Either way, it's the one that it works. So if you actually just search for DBT and Me Podcast in Facebook, you'll get there. And we pull a lot of these from the comments posted in there as well. So until next time, I don't know. Be well.
Yes, that's a good way to end. Thanks, everyone.
To learn more about us and the DBT skills we're teaching each week, join our Facebook group. Simply log in to your Facebook profile and search for DBT and Me Podcast.